Episode 1195, My Strength is My Story with Hannah Seymour, the College Girls Survival Guide.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at a stop
sign, watching people. Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day of the week. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us a beautiful young woman. Her name is Hannah Seymour. And you know what? We took it all the way back to the college days. Oh, are you ready to feel much younger today? You'll want to stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Hannah's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and to sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, we did go back a few years, some more for me than her, but it was so much fun. And it was also very eye-opening as a mom who has college girls, as a mom who's an auntie who has a niece who's going off to college. College is a very influential time of life. And it's sometimes very difficult for us as a young lady growing up to go into that brand new world. And it is a brand new world out there. So I'm telling you right now, you are going to have a lot of fun. You're probably going to laugh. You're probably going to reminisce with us and go like, oh, I remember her. And you're going to have a name pop in your head. It's going to be fun memories. Are you ready to go back to the dorm? Well, without further ado, let's welcome in Hannah Seymour, the College Girls Survival Guide. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. Today we have with us a brand new mommy and someone who really knows her college stuff. Oh yes, it's Hannah Seymour. She's a wife of 4 years and like I said, a brand new mommy to a sweet little adorable baby boy. She has a bachelor's degree in interdisciplinary social sciences and her master's in higher education and student affairs. Hannah has mentored thousands of young women, helping them transition smoothly from high school to college and beyond. She has taken her expertise and married it with her faith. And now, Hannah is the author of her brand new book, The College Girl Survival Guide, 52 Honest, Faith-Filled Answers to Your Biggest Concerns. Boy, I wish I had this book when I was going off to college. And that was, we won't go into that. That's for another episode. Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ. How are you, Hannah?
I am great. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure and honor. And I mean, you're like a 20-something, right?
I wish, but thank you for thinking that.
Well, I mean, you're here to talk about all college. But before we get into that, I want to ask you, what fills your heart with joy?
Oh, man. Right now, honestly, it's just sweet times with my husband and our brand new baby boy. I mean, that truly, it's, you know, I think anyone who's been a mom, it's like we're in survival mode right now with an infant and the book launch and all of that. And so it's just those still quiet moments when I've got a happy baby who's smiling at me and my husband next to me.
Oh, that is sweet. It's like you gave birth to twins or something.
I kind of did.
Ooh, no wonder you're kind of burning the candles at both ends. Well, hopefully today you're going to share your expertise on college. You've mentored thousands of women. Yeah. How did you end up becoming this college mentor and expert?
So part of it is my own college journey. So during my 4 years of college, I had some incredible mentors, both faculty and staff, who really poured into me, but none who shared my Christian faith. And so when I was graduating college and I realized that that's what I wanted to do with my life, I wanted to go and be faculty and staff on a university, I realized, man, I can be that same mentor, but I can also have that Christian faith element and help walk alongside students that believe what I believe and who don't. So anyway, that was my journey into higher education and then started working. I've worked on a few different college campuses and mentored lots of college women, you know, there in my office. But then I also started doing high school ministry and just loved working with high school girls and was preparing them for college. And long story short, ended up writing this blog that at the time was called Dear Hannah. And it was really a Q&A format of just college girls submitting their, you know, concern of the week to this blog, and I would answer their question. And so that blog, which I really started for 12 girls that graduated high school and were at colleges all over the country, and pretty quickly it blew up to like thousands of college girls were reading it every single week and writing in. And so anyway, that's really how it evolved. So I found I was, of course, mentoring girls in my office and mentoring girls through cyberspace and everything in between. So, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, take us back to when you were growing up. What was it like? You didn't come from a normal background by any means.
Does anyone have normal? You know, I grew up a pastor's kid, and my whole life, I'm sure you got this too. People would say, well, what's it like growing up as a pastor's kid? And I'd say, well, what's it like growing up as an accountant's kid? Or, you know, like, I don't know. We all just know what we know. But I did. I grew up in a great Christian family. My dad was a pastor, usually of pretty large mega churches. So I kind of learned to grow up in the spotlight and be the girl that everyone thought I should be. And I think most pastors' kids kind of go one of two ways, and either they're rebels without a cause, or they're like goody two shoe to the extreme. And I wasn't a goody two shoe to the extreme, but I definitely knew what was expected of me, and I knew how to put on that face. And a lot of my college journey was me learning to just be who I am and be authentic me and trust that people would take it or leave it. And just learning that I don't have to be what people expect. I just need to be what God has put on my heart and who He has designed me to be. And so that was a huge learning process for me of, you don't have to be the perfect pastor's kid. Just be you, be who God designed you to be.
And that's a really important point, because there are a lot of pressures now with technology out there that everything is thrown at our high schoolers. And it goes down into middle school and elementary. As you know, I'm a mom of five, and I have three in college now. There are times I'm like, why didn't I have this book when I needed it? Because I could have just said, would you please read chapter 4, please? It's concerned freshman year, the number one thing. You know, I could just hand it off, but it is tough. It's tough growing up.
Yeah.
And I know when you get into high school and you start getting towards the very end and graduation is coming up, which in fact we have our number three, Ashley, she has early graduated, but she's going to walk here in May.
Okay.
We've already had those discussions during Christmas time. Everybody's like, what's next? What's next?
Right.
What do you tell that poor child that is getting bombarded with the question, what's next?
I know. It's so hard. And I talk about that in my book, that it starts around age 16, maybe, and it literally never ends. And I think that's the big shocker, is from high school to college, they think, oh, once I've got that answer down, it's finished. But the second you graduate from college, everyone's going, what's next? What's the job? And I talk about this in my book. It's, well, you get that first job, but then people go, well, what's next? Are you staying at that company? Are you shifting? What about your dating life? Dating anyone special? When are y'all getting married? When are you having kids? How many kids are you going to have? You know, I mean, it's constantly, our culture has let us define our identities about what we're doing, you know, who we're doing it with, what's going on. And so a lot of it is, number one, remember that in God's economy, what's next doesn't define you. That you are worthy and valuable, and who you are is who God says you are. And so while our culture is going to ask you 1,000 times what's next, don't let that pressure define you. It doesn't define your worth. It's okay not to know the answer right away, especially the high school to college and the college to post-college. It's part of the journey. It's knowing, all I have to know, my dad always says, just do the next thing. What's just the very next thing? Don't worry about the 2-year plan, the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan, all well and good. And of course, we all want to have some sort of greater vision and hope for our lives. But for an 18-year-old, to ask an 18-year-old to know where they're going to college, what they're going to major in, what they're going to do with their lives, that is a lot of pressure. And I mean, I didn't know. Well, I thought I did, but I'm not doing, my life is nothing like I thought it would be when I was 18. So to just relieve them of that pressure. And again, I think over and over in my book, I just talk about college is the time for you to figure out who God created you to be. What are your skills? What are the experiences He's already given you? And then let's look at that and think about, how that might help inform us of what to do next, what that next first right step is. And then again, trust God and the rest of it. You don't have to have it all planned out. He does. He's got it planned out for you.
Amen. Amen to that. And you all are going to want to pick up your own copy of The College Girl Survival Guide, 52 Honest, Faith-Filled Answers to Your Biggest Concerns. Well, as you got into high school, yes, what fears began to shake your heart?
What fears did I have? I think that's so funny. I don't know if fears were my issue at that point. I left college. I had one plan in mind, and that was to become a Christian, a female artist. I wanted to do music. I moved to Nashville. I pursued that in college. And really it was unmet expectations. I had certain expectations of how college would unfold, of how my career would unfold, studying music, all of that. And over and over and over, nothing was unfolding like I thought it would. And so I think the shift of me trying to decide, okay, life is not working out the way I thought it would. What does that mean? And where do I go from here? And truly one of the big aha moments for me, all I had studied and focused on up until 18 truly was music. And when I got to college, I realized I love sociology. I love psychology. I love English. There's all these other things in college and that our world has to offer that I hadn't spent time diving into. And I wondered, well, maybe I would be more interested in doing something like that. I love music, but maybe music isn't my career. Sure, God's given me a gift, but it doesn't mean that like that's the one thing I have to do with my life. And so I think that was a big journey for me. Was again, I mean, I'm a broken record going back to who has God created me to be? And I knew a sliver of it, but really those 4 years was part of my exploration of going, okay, Lord, I now see all these different interests, areas of strength and giftedness, experiences you've already given me to help me unpack some of these things. Okay, now what does all this mean for what you've got planned for me and ultimately for your kingdom?
So you got into college and everything went real smoothly, didn't it? You found the college of your choice and stayed there.
Right. Yeah. So I had a, you know, tunnel vision for Belmont University. It's the place to go if you want to be in the entertainment industry. I still believe that to this day because 10 years later, I ended up working at Belmont University for 6 years. So doing that, helping prepare students for the entertainment industry. But I started off and about, like I said, really a couple months in, I realized I'm not the best in the room. I don't want it the most in the room. Those two things combined mean I am not going to make it in the entertainment industry. So that happened. Two, I realized financially it was going to be really hard for me to make it through Belmont without graduating with just hundreds of dollars in student loans. And I had been raised to believe that it was a better idea to not do student loans for college. And so I thought, okay, I need to really think through this. So, a long story short, I ended up transferring and I went to a state college that I vowed I would never go to, where I knew people from high school and my church community and people that I was trying to run away from when I originally set off to college. And, I had certain expectations. They were not what my reality was. And I had to shift and be flexible with, okay, what else might God have for me? And ultimately ended up transferring, which was, whenever I talk about my story, I was supposed to go to Belmont my freshman year. I believed that because I believed that I needed to learn some things and see that God maybe had a different direction in mind for my life than what I had, in order for me then to pivot and go, okay, I'm going to change my major and study something else and ultimately have a completely different career path than what I had thought at 18.
Wow. So from a parent's aspect, how bad did your parents freak out on all this?
That's such a good question. So both my parents are very steady, very emotionally just, you know, they're rocks. My mom didn't blink, didn't bat an eyelash. She was so on board. My dad, interestingly, really pushed back on if God had gifted me in music and I was deciding to stop doing it, was I being a good steward of what God had given me? And it was a fight. And it was really, truly, it was the first time in my life that I directly went against the advice that my dad was giving me. And I will also say this, both of them, once I left for college, went, we're here. We want to help guide you and give you advice, but we are not going to tell you what to do anymore. You're 18. This is part of you growing up and becoming an adult. You have wisdom. You have, not, you know, you've got all the things that you need to make the right decisions, and we've got to let you do that. So they would give me advice, but they would not tell me directly what they thought I should do. And so again, once I did make that decision, I'm going to transfer. And actually, I chose to study music for another year plus. But I shifted from commercial to classical and, you know, had some other ideas of what I was going to do. They were on board and they were encouraging once I made that decision. But it was definitely a discussion of, you've set out your entire life to do this, and suddenly 3 months in, you're questioning whether or not that's right, which I think is really typical for the 18-year-old. And sometimes the questions don't mean it's wrong, you know? I mean, but for me, it really was. I think it was God's timing in showing me, yes, you can sing and play the piano and you love it and you're going to do that. You're going to help lead folks in worship, you know, the rest of your life. But it doesn't mean that my design for you is to go become a Christian artist and be in the music industry in that way. So it took me time to figure out, okay, well, what does this mean?
And so eventually you transferred, obviously you transferred into your sophomore year to the State University.
James Madison University. Yeah. Yeah. And so I transferred, and that is a huge part of my story and in my book about transfer students have it hard. I mean, you got to enter a new environment where your peers already have their friend group set up. The university really caters to freshmen. So over and over and over, you're kind of annoyed feeling like, I've got this college thing down, guys. Like, I know how to do college. I just don't know this university system. There's a lot of catch up to do in academics. And so anyway, it was the right decision for me. It's not right for everybody, but it was definitely the right decision for me to transfer.
That's fabulous. Well, God obviously had a plan, and you may have not seen it in the middle of it, but as you walk through it, he obviously then continued to reveal his divine plan, and probably still is somewhat.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, now you're a mama, so who would have thought you would have been a mama and giving birth to a brand new book?
Not I. Yeah. And I wouldn't have planned it that way either, but he knew. So
he knew. And that's why you all are going to want to pick up your own copy of The College Girl Survival Guide, 52 Honest, Faith-Filled Answers to Your Biggest Concerns. But what was the most challenging obstacle you faced in college as a female?
So I really think it was trying to figure out what I wanted to do post-graduation. I was a music major for 2 full years. I had a major freak out meltdown, decided not to be a music major any longer, and was really directionless. I knew what I was interested in, but I didn't know how that would formulate into a career. You read in the beginning my bachelor's, it's in interdisciplinary social sciences, which we called a create your own major. I mean, it was like I took psychology classes and sociology classes and focused on family issues. And what does that mean? You know, so it meant I had to go to grad school is what it meant. But even then I thought, I don't know what I want to go to grad school for. Do I want to be a counselor? Do I want to be a remedial reading specialist? I was all over the board. And it really took one of those staff mentors to say, hey, I think you should do what I do. You've been a student leader your whole time. You're an RA. You're influencing your peers already. Go get your master's in this and be me on another college campus, invest, mentor, coach other women like yourself. And, but I did not figure that out until like December of my senior year of college. And so it was a journey, a weekly freak out, weekly new plan. I always had a new plan for my life, truly from like, I mean, all through junior and senior year. And it took a while. And even then, I think I've talked about this a little bit in my book. When, you know, I currently don't have a traditional job on a university campus. And even for me to walk away from that role was another moment where I had to pause and go, okay, Lord, you know, I thought we had decided that this is what I was going to do with my life. Am I stepping away from what you've really called me to do, and understanding, you know, God's will for our lives isn't this like teeny tiny dot on a map. There's so much more freedom and choice and risk and creation. And so for me to get comfortable with, again, I think God has created all of us to do, you know, with certain strengths, certain experiences, but the options, there's a lot of options for us within that realm. So anyway, that was my struggle then. And I think it's going to continue to be my struggle the rest of my life.
Yeah. It's the question that you don't ever want to be asked. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, ask me when I die and then maybe I can tell you when I'm in heaven. But until then, no answer.
Yeah.
I plead the fifth.
Exactly.
Well, where did God show up in your college career the most?
Gosh, a lot of points. I think two that come to mind first, other strong Christian women, peers, that knew what they believed, that loved the Lord, that wanted to obey Him and live a life that was pleasing to Him. I was surrounded at James Madison by women that fit that description. And what a gift. I didn't understand what a gift that was when I was living it, as I do now. And I look back and I think, wow, that's rare. It's rare to be surrounded by that many amazing Christian girls that were my age. And then also there was one woman in particular who probably was in her early 50s at the time, who was our small group leader. And she met with us weekly and would open the Bible and talk about what God was teaching her. And we would talk about what God was teaching us. But to have that one older voice, because in college, you're pretty much surrounded by everyone that's 18 to 22. And you've really got to seek out folks that are, you know, beyond that current season of life. And she sought us out. I mean, she wanted to be investing in college women and calling them to really understand the bigger picture for their lives. Cause it's easy to get really, you know, tunnel vision when you're in that 18 to 22 year old season. So anyway, her impact on my life, I think, is just evidence of God's hand over me and Him being faithful to me.
And what a legacy that she's left by mentoring these women. And now look what you are doing in return, not necessarily in honoring her, but honoring, yes, her work, because
certainly
it glorified God.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Praise the Lord. Well, a lot of college students are told what to bring, what to pack, what to wear, how much to eat, what class to attend, all of this. What would you tell them when it comes to what should you give up?
Oh, that's really good. So it's so funny because in my book, I know I talk about finding balance and prioritizing and understanding you have to learn to say no. But I've never been asked that question directly of what do you give up? I would be very cautious to give one prescription because I think often every student is different. Their priorities are different. What they need to give up is probably different. Oh, you may have stumped me on that. But it's a valuable and I think vital question for every college student to ask of what do I need to give up? And they probably know. And I think the easy answer, of course, is like giving up spending an hour a day on Instagram or Snapchat or, you know, I mean, there's value in some of that stuff of connecting with your friends, but we let it suck up a lot of our time, I think. But some people may need to give up some toxic relationships, whether it's current relationships in college or back from high school, or, I mean, I think we all kind of know those areas of our life that's like, yeah, it's time to cut that out and let God refill it with something else that's what He has designed and not something that I've kind of created out of I always talk about, we have a God-given need. And oftentimes we fill God-given needs with something that wasn't what He intended us to fill it with. And so thinking about, do I have some areas in my life that are God-given needs, but I'm fulfilling it in a way that's not what He designed.
I love that. Well, I know I do like to stump some people on questions, and it's
you
not
did.
To stump you,
totally
but
did.
But I think it's too that we as parents, as a mom, as an auntie, I'm not a grandma yet. Praise be to God. I want to be eventually, but not now. Girls, are you listening to me? Boys too. No. When they do listen to my episodes, which sometimes they do. So, you know, I have to throw in advice when I can because you know how it goes, regardless of your age.
Totally.
When we're talking about giving up, what would you tell the moms, the aunties, and the grandmas out there listening? What would you tell them? What words of wisdom would you give them when it comes to loving and caretaking their beautiful daughter or granddaughter or niece? She's going off to college. What words of wisdom would you give them?
Be their biggest champion. So you are, you know, my mom, I've heard her say this 1,000 times, your child steps out of your front door and all the world does is tell them that they're not enough. They're not pretty enough. They're not smart enough. They're not strong enough. They're not skilled enough. I mean, that is your child, your student is getting bombarded with negative messages about who they are. You get to be their safe place and their biggest champion. They don't need you to be critical of them. They need you to be their greatest champion. So number one, encourage your kid, encourage your child. Tell them where you see their strengths. Tell them where you see them thriving, but just encourage them more than you think they need, because I guarantee they need it even more than you think they do. And then two, just constantly be reminding your child that you are there and open for dialogue. Your college student is going to face a myriad of challenges. Some might seem trivial to you. Others are significant. I mean, the party culture with drinking and drugs, the hookup culture, the sexual assault rates on college campuses, suicide ideation, there's a lot going on these college campuses. And for your student just to know that you're there to talk, that you're a safe place, they better know what you stand for and what your expectations are of them. But at the same time, to know if I screw up, if I make a mistake, I can still come home and talk to mom or dad about it, and it's a safe place, and they're still going to love and encourage me. And then the third thing I always tell parents is share your own stories. You probably have your own stories of failures and mistakes and victories, whether it was in college or if you didn't go to college. Still, your process from going from a teenager to an adult. Some of the stories that my parents, specifically their failures, or just times of hardship that they shared with me during their season of high school through college, those stories have, I can tell them all maybe better than they can at this point. And they helped me to see, my parents weren't perfect. They made mistakes. Do they have regrets that they wish they could relive? They sure do. And for me to be able to learn from them and think about those when I'm making my own decisions were huge for me. So just don't underestimate the power of your own story and how sharing that with your child may open a door to them coming back to you later saying, okay, mom, I screwed up, or this happened and I hate it, or what is your advice on this, or that kind of thing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. As a mom of college daughters and also a college son,
yeah,
it's real important to keep that dialogue, that open communication without smothering them.
Yes.
This term, yes. Helicopter parent. What's your take on that from the expert side and the college girl side?
Yeah, so we joke now, it's not helicopter anymore, it's drone parent, right?
Oh, that's like, right. Oh yes, I forgot. We're a drone now. I don't look real good as a drone, I'm just saying.
So I mean, as a higher ed professional, I have seen it all. I have seen parents who download every syllabus that their child has. They read every book, they proofread every paper, they are like helping their child study for exams. I have had parents call me, conference call in the parents of the other student, and I am on a conference call with parents about their children's roommate conflict. The students are not part of the equation. The students have never come to me. The students have never asked for help. They're talking to their parents about it, and so their parents have decided to get involved. I have seen it all. So for me, it always goes back to be their greatest champion, but don't do it for them. Like, college is your student's time to figure out how to become an adult, right? That's what we want. We want them to graduate, to get a job, and to be an independent, successful adult that can pay their own bills, that can handle their own life, that can manage their own relationships. So it's great to be talking to your child about their roommate conflict, give them advice. Please don't call the housing office to work it out for them. Like, you've got to let your student do that on their behalf. That's a big thing. Again, it's like, I get that you want to know what's going on with your child, and maybe you do need to keep them accountable on their assignments, but you shouldn't. Even if that need is there, they've got to figure out how to manage their time and turn in assignments, because they need to be hireable. They need to be able to get a job and meet their work deadlines, right? So, I know it's hard, and I've been a parent for 4 months, so I can't fathom what it's going to be like when my son goes off to college and I need to like know everything and be part of his life. So I sympathize with the desire, but we got to let go. We got to let our kids do it themselves. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to fall on their face, and it's part of the maturation process. Mm-hmm.
Amen. We do have to let them go. As hard as it is, I promise you, though, they come back. They do. Yeah, and they come back, you know, with smiles, sometimes tears, too. But nothing feels better. And I can say this, having three of my five now in college, nothing feels better than to see your child succeed without you holding their hand.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that parents, I think, are, especially moms. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe some dads, but dads are okay. They just kind of shove them out. Go, you know, see, if you swim and you drown, you'll learn, right?
Right.
As moms, we want to cuddle and hold and you know, we want that time back. You can still have that time. It's just not going to be as often. It's not going to be every Friday night, even if they are living in your house.
Yes.
You know, and a commuter student. So I completely 100% agree. All right. So now let's jump to the college girls.
Yes.
What little secret? I almost wanted to say what dirty little secret, but that just doesn't sound right. But maybe we should say it that way. But what little secret would you tell a young woman about ready to embrace college?
Well, you read my book, so you know. But I would tell them that, and this probably is a dirty little secret, is that it's not going to be the best 4 years of your life. And I know that sounds so, I'm say my book, hear me out. I'm not trying to be negative Nancy, but I want to help set them up with realistic expectations. It's going to be a great 4 years. But if college is the best 4 years of your life, and then what? At 22, it's over? We don't have any great more seasons of life to live? That is so depressing. So I think to take the pressure off of them, it's going to be great, but it's not the best 4 years. Like, let's hope that all of life is great. It's all going to have ups and downs. I think that's my number one secret that I love to just help prepare them, give them a dose of reality.
Yeah. Oh, I love that one. It's like, oh, well, what do you tell them? Because we've talked to our kids about that, but I don't know that we've ever pushed this is the best 4 years. Now, maybe if you want to impress upon them of the life they've had so far, maybe.
Sure.
But you know what? I mean, think about your freshman year. It wasn't all that great.
No, it's
you hated
hard.
It.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, not that you hated it. Maybe that's kind of a strong word, but it wasn't easy peasy. It wasn't mac and cheese night all the time and everything was just hunky dory and you came home and to your dorm and all was great. It wasn't. You had some major hurdles to
overcome.
I had a
really hard roommate. I had a lot of confusion on major and where I should be in. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys are going to want to read some of her stories because she includes them. So you want to pick up your own guide of the College Girl Survival Guide, 52 honest, faith-filled answers to your biggest concerns. And maybe you don't have a college, maybe your grandma, and your children even are older, pick it up for a neighbor. Mm-hmm. Give this as a high school graduation. And if they're in college, still give it to them. And you know what, moms? I'm telling you, you could benefit from this. You can read this from the ear of the college girl and listen to some of the conversations that are in here, because your tone and how you speak to your child will be different because your child is now becoming an adult, and that is a hard shift for a mom. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage, pick one up and give one as a, you know, as a gift to a friend. It is a really great read. I know, because I read it. All right. So in talking to girls around the country, what was the most common concern that came up?
The number one question I'll get it four times this week. How do I tell my roommate I don't want to live with her? That is the number one. And I had a friend recently remind me who's in her late 20s and has a couple roommates. She said, yeah, I'm still wondering that today too. You know, I mean, it's not even a thing. It's college specific, certainly, but it doesn't necessarily go away until you're married to your roommate. And then that's a whole other
That's a whole nother book and a whole nother episode.
That's right. So that is the number one thing. And I would just umbrella that really with roommate conflicts. Like I joke in the book, you know, show me a girl that doesn't have one roommate conflict over 4 years of college and I'll give her $100. I mean, it's just, it's not, even if you live with your best friend and it's all hunky dory, the likelihood that you're going to have a roommate conflict, I mean, you're going to, you're living in a 12 by 12 with another human being that's not yourself, you know? So that is certainly the most common.
Well, share your story. We got to share at least one story. This was your roommate that kind of was not all tidy.
Yes.
And you're somewhat of a neat freak. You said it yourself, so I'm saying it kindly.
I did. Yeah, you can call me Monica from Friends is what I joke. I'm like a little anal retentive about it. It's not pretty.
So what happened with that roommate?
Yeah, so this roommate, I mean, truly you could have not put two more opposite people in a bedroom. She, you know, everything in like the hippie pot smoking, you know, everything that you would imagine on that side of the spectrum was my sweet roommate. And then I was on the other uptight, clean, you know, all of that side. It was hard. I don't actually tell that many stories in the book because I wanted to be cautious, but I will share. I mean, I would joke, and my roommates knew that I would come home sometimes into my room, and she would be sitting in the middle of our floor, topless, like meditating, and I would be like bringing friends over, or you know, or just the like there were animals truly growing in her side of mess and chaos and dirty dishes and. Of course, lots of pot smoking in our room, which I was a rule follower. So, and that's very much against university rules. So, you know, that freaked me out. So lots of daily, hour by hour conflict. But I say in my book, if I could live with her for a full year, you can live with anybody for a year. And I wasn't a mat. I didn't let her walk all over me. We had countless conversations where, and oftentimes I would have to leave the room and process and kind of pep talk myself through, okay, how do I confront her on like, hey, can we figure out how you like don't need to meditate topless so that when I bring friends over, you know, I mean, I had to figure out how do I communicate these things with her? But sitting down and learning to stick up for myself, but to be kind, you know, I was a Christian. She knew I was a Christian. I needed to be a good representation of Jesus. Jesus is not walking into a roommate conflict and being nasty rude to his roommate who maybe is nasty rude to him, but Jesus always responds in love and in kindness. He's also not a doormat. He does not let people walk over him. But so having to figure out, okay, how do I represent Christ well, but still stick up for myself, still communicate, hey, we got to compromise. This is my living space too. But I want to honor you and respect that it's also your living space. So how do we do this together for 9 months when we are total opposites? And we did it. And we parted ways on good terms at the end of 9 months. And I mean, I look back at that. She was not my last roommate conflict, but I look back at that roommate scenario and go, God had designed that. He planned that to teach me so many things. And I could have made the decision to get out of there as fast as possible. I could have found a different roommate, you know, a different space to live on campus. And I didn't. I chose to stick it through. And I even had that. I had the opportunity. I could have moved out. And I thought, I can do this. I can live with her. I can make this work. Because I knew if God is sovereign over everything in my life, is he not sovereign over who my random roommate assignment was my freshman year? And it doesn't mean everyone has to stick it out with their crazy roommate. But I knew in my scenario, I think God has a purpose in this for me. And so we did it. We made it happen.
You made it happen, and you birthed not only a live little baby, but a book to talk all about it. Very sweet. And I think that's important because you bring out in your book the kindness. That is a theme throughout, and not necessarily, you know, what would Jesus do type of theme, but just reiterating the fact that, look, we are stewards of him. We are showing his love, and that may be the only way that they come in contact with us, even going to a faith-based college. There are some faith-based colleges that people attend that are not, you know, believers whatsoever, or you don't even know what they believe, but they're there and you wonder how in the heck they got there to begin with.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah. In your book, you do say everything is normal.
Normal. Mm-hmm.
How is everything normal? Because I know. I can remember. Now, I went through college different, but that's definitely for another episode because I'm originally from Hawaii, so I came back to the mainland. So I knew absolutely nobody, and I had no family around. It was crazy. But when you're going through college and you're beginning to experience the freshmen and the freshmen 10 or 15, I don't know what it is now. Some of it I've heard 50 or 25.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, it's somewhere, it's ridiculous. How can, I mean, nothing's normal, it seems like, yet you're telling us everything is normal.
Well, and that's why I said that, because I found that in my one-on-one, you know, conversations that I was having in my office with all these different college girls, every single time they were coming in with some problem or issue, and they just felt like they were the only one that had ever experienced that. I'm all alone. No one else has gone through this. No one else knows. And I think the shame that just kind of comes crashing down us when we feel isolated in our hardship makes things a thousand times worse. And I just found that I was continually reminding girls, hey, this is normal. You hate your roommate. That is normal. You love your roommate and your best friends and attached to the hip. That's also normal. You're super homesick. Yeah, that's normal. Or you don't want to go home at all and you're terrified of going home for Christmas break because you know you're going to be miserable. That's also normal. Or, I mean, so yeah, like how, you know, I know it sounds contradictory saying if you're homesick, that's normal. And if you are so worried about going actually back to your home with your parents, that's also normal. But really just this idea of you're not alone. There's nothing you can experience that someone else hasn't already experienced. And also in my, you know, in my book, there's several parts where I talk about some really hard things, some like depression, suicide ideation, or just different mental health issues. There I say, this is common. It's not normal. So you know, I kind of flip it a little bit, but saying, hey, we shouldn't be feeling like this. Like, but you know what? It's common. Again, you're not alone. There are a lot of women that struggle with anxiety and depression and suicide ideation, all of these things during the 18 to 22 year old years. That is common. But to say that it's common doesn't mean, hey, this is not how we should be. And we need to get help because this is not how God has designed for you to be living right now. And there's a way out of this. So anyway, all of that, it sounds like a total contradiction, but really the bottom line is you're not alone. You're not isolated. There are other women who've experienced this and are probably experiencing it right now, probably even on your hall. So
yeah, that's what that's about. And there's probably more to come of that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it doesn't fade.
No, it doesn't fade after college. I mean, I think as a new mom, I'm experiencing that now of, I've been amazed at the tribe of mama friends that I have. You know, when I first had my son and the first 2 weeks of learning how to breastfeed and doing all of this and the texts that I'm getting encouraging me, but women whose stories are everywhere, right? Where it's hard, it's easy, this worked, this didn't work. And so all of that conversation was so helpful and encouraging to me as a brand new mom. Well, it's the same thing for a college girl, you know, the same issues and challenges she's facing, she needs other women, other friends that come around her who've also experienced it to say, hey, this is normal and we're going to get through this and this is how you get through it.
Well, like you'd mentioned depression and suicide. You went through a very dark season, maybe a nice way to put it, for you. Cool. Where did you find yourself as kind of reframing who you were coming out on the other side of all of that?
Yeah. So I had forgotten. I wrote about that in the book. That's so funny. I went through a major season of depression and eating disorder in late high school, junior and senior year. I had, like I mentioned before, growing up as a PK, I knew how to be who people wanted me to be. I was this perfect PK daughter. I did everything, you know, high achieving. I had the perfect little life, and that's how I displayed it. And really what was going on for some of that season was I was driving to school super early and like sitting in my car and bawling for 30 minutes to an hour. And then I would decide it was time to stop crying and I would wipe off my face and wait for my complexion and my, you know, my colors to come back to normal. And I'd walk into school and pretend like everything was okay. And at that time, I had already gone through some serious seasons of doubt and exploration in just what I believed in late middle school, which, I mean, it's so funny because you think, oh, middle school. It was very impactful for me. And truly by eighth grade, I really decided like, I'm all in, I'm going to follow Jesus. I think this is it. I think this is the best way for us to live. I think his story is the best story, for us to follow. And so anyway, because I had gone through that crisis of faith, by the end of high school, I knew that amidst my depression, I needed to ask for help. I needed to talk to people. I needed to go to counseling. I wasn't there yet. And all I needed to do was to wake up every morning and read the Bible and try to figure out who God was and what he said about me. And it truly was being disciplined and doing that for about a year. I didn't feel good. It wasn't like I had this warm, fuzzy feeling when I was opening my Bible and reading it and the Holy Spirit comes crashing down on me. It wasn't like that. It was just a faithful, like, okay, I'm going to open the Bible and see what it says today and hope that it encourages my heart. And really, after about a year of faithfully doing that, at that point, the Lord finally mended my heart enough where I could finally tell someone. And I went home from school finally one day and told my mom and said, hey, I'm thinking about cutting myself. I'm thinking like, these are all the things that are going on. She had picked up majorly on warning signs of my eating disorder and had been gently bringing them up, but she knew I was not going to confess that stuff was going on. So eventually we did and had that conversation, and she helped me, you know, start steps towards getting the professional help that I needed. But it genuinely was just every morning deciding, I'm going to choose that Jesus loves me. I'm going to choose to believe that his word has truth in it for me. And I'm going to live this day and see how it goes.
Mm. Look where he brought you, Hannah.
That's right.
I mean, just beautiful. And I love that in your book, you do encourage professional and seeking professional help. And I think that is important. The counseling, the psychology part of it, possibly even psychiatrists. Obviously, every situation is different.
That's right.
But there is some good chapters in here. So if you know people who are struggling and you really don't even know how to start the conversation, or you even are feeling shame and guilt yourself that you have someone you love going through this, I would say grab this book and go right to that chapter. That's what I love about this book. You don't have to read it cover to cover.
Nope, you don't.
You can jump all around, and you list them so nicely in the very front, so you can just highlight and go, oh, yeah, I need to read. Let's see. Do I really want to have to save sex for marriage? Okay, I just happened to put my finger on that, but that's a good one that needs to be, you know, talked to about. Some of us feel uncomfortable. Well, start the conversation. You got the book to do it.
Yep.
We can't leave out our dads.
Yeah.
We talked about our moms and our grandmas and our aunties. Well, what about our male role models, the dads in our lives? What would you tell them? Especially, you know, they're sending off their baby, and there's nothing like sending off the baby girl. Doesn't matter where you fall into the line of children, they're always the baby girl.
Yep, always. So I think I talk about in my book, I had to learn how to really pursue my dad when I was in college. I didn't realize, my dad and I had been close growing up, but I still, you know, that mom-daughter relationship, I would come home and dish all the high school drama that was going on. Like, my mom was the one that listened to that. And so when I went off to college, I would call, and, you know, this is, of course, when we still had landlines. So, like, this is, today is so different, but I would call the landline in the house, and my dad would answer, and I would say, hey, Dad, can I talk to Mom? And he'd go, okay, you know, I love you, and pass off the phone. And it took my dad's best friend calling me one day and saying, Hannah, you are hurting your dad's feelings. You call to talk about what's going on, and you only talk to your mom, and then you hang up the phone. And so, you know, for me, I had to learn, oh my gosh, my dad wants to know and be a part of my life. And so I would say for dads, hey, you get to have you've got the cell phone now, you know, you have a one-way connection to your daughter. Keep pursuing her, call her, you know, make an appointment in your book, call her every Wednesday when you're on your way home from work and you know that, you know, she has a break in between classes or whatever, call her, check in, see how she's doing, be her biggest champion. And that's one thing that my dad, I tease, like, my number one fan in life is my father. If you knew my dad, he would have bragged to you about me 8,000 times to the point of annoyance. But that did something for me as a little girl, as a middle schooler, high schooler, even today as an adult, to know that my dad is so proud of me. He constantly encourages me to my face. He's constantly telling other folks about me. That probably has put more wind in my sails than anything else in the world. Little girls, no matter how old, you know, I'm almost 34. This little girl still needs her dad to tell her that he's proud of her and he thinks he's doing a good job. And it means more than anything to me, even today. So dads, encourage your daughter like crazy and reach out, call her, talk to her, see how she's doing.
That's right. Because sometimes they kind of feel weird about calling dad, because usually you call dad because you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dad, can you, whatever. But dads, they want you to be a part. So
yes,
definitely pursue. What would you tell the, and whether it's moms or dads, but definitely the college girl,
mm-hmm.
who feels like God has gone silent and, you know, everything that she's asking for, praying for, just like nothing's lining up. Where mm-hmm. are you, God?
Yep. So I talk about that in my book too. And I walk through a couple, you know, the Bible tells us sometimes God is silent because we have wrong motives. Sometimes it's because of sin in our life. And so I kind of quickly unpack those two things, just because we all need to do that self-check sometimes. Am I praying for something that I just have total wrong motives about? And is that why God's silent? Because he's waiting for me to figure out, hey girl, you got the wrong motives. You know, we need to refresh on your perspective here. But a lot of times I believe, I mean, we know Jesus tells us, I'll never leave you or forsake you. He is right there. But I get it. I have been in those seasons where it feels like God could not be farther away. But if you're seeking his face, if you're praying about it, if you know, you're trying to figure out what to do and be aligned with him, I think a lot of times God has given us, well, he always has given us the ability for free will, for choice, for decision-making. And often I think in life we're going through, there's not a, you know, this is God's, we talked about this earlier. It's not, God's will isn't this tiny dot on a map. He's given us all sorts of choices and decisions we get to make. And I think he is pleased and delighted when we make decisions, when we take risks, when we've got wisdom, we've got his word in print in the Bible. And so I think sometimes it's not that he's gone silent. I think he's just going, hey, this, you've got this. Make the decision. There's not a bad decision and a good decision. There's just 2-3 great choices. Choose one, and I'm going to bless you like crazy, and I'm going to help you down whatever path you choose. So I think a lot of times we just need to hear that and be reminded that we've got freedom, that he delights in us making decisions. And if you're truly, you're seeking his face and you're trying to do what he wants to do, he's with you. He's going to bless you. He's going to, you know, be right there alongside you. It may just be time for you to make a decision.
Amen, sister. I love it. What was the greatest lesson you learned from college that wasn't in the classroom?
The greatest, so many that weren't in the classroom. I learned a lot in the classroom, but I think.
Well, you changed your major a few times, so yeah, surely so. You learned a few extra things.
I think the number one thing I learned in college was how to pursue people. So how to sit back and observe folks and go, okay, I want to know that girl, or I want to know that guy, or that person's doing something. Maybe it wasn't even a peer, but someone, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s that I thought, man, their marriage is killer. I want a marriage like that someday. Or that woman, her career, the way she's making decisions. Okay, I'm fascinated with that. So I learned to kind of look around and see people that I thought there's some aspect of them that I want to be like that, or that I value or appreciate, you know, what they're doing. And then how to pursue them, how to build a relationship with them, how to ask them to coffee, ask them to lunch, spend time with them, cultivating that relationship. I think that was the biggest thing for me. And what that did, because we all know we have to make friends the rest of our lives, whether it's in college, post-college, we move, our friends move, whatever. I mean, we are going to be in the friend-making business until the day we die. And actually, I think in heaven, we're making friends too, because we're going to be meeting all sorts of new people. So to learn the habit and how to pursue and build real friendships, not just friends of convenience, not surfacey friendships, but real meaningful friendships that encourage you to be who God designed you to be, to figure out how to do that in college will set you up for life. And I think I learned that. I think that was one of God's really gracious gifts to me in the hardship of transferring and all of that. I think, you know, it was like, Hannah, I'm going to help you learn how to do this so that if you've got friends and community that encourage you for the rest of your life. Mm.
Do you recall a Bible verse that was your constant throughout your college years?
There, in one of the lower seasons, I had a boyfriend break up with me that I thought was my husband, thought I was going to marry him. My parents moved. I had grown up primarily in the Northern Virginia area, and they decided to move to Chicago, and that weirdly impacted me. I was really upset by it, because I didn't have a home to go home to anymore while I was in college, and some other things going on that I won't get into, but I was in a season where I just thought, everything that's important to me has been stripped away. And David in the Psalms laments, who have I on this earth but you? What does this earth have to offer? Nothing. All I have is you, Lord. And, you know, it's so funny because I think I look back and go, sheesh, that was dramatic. You know, I mean, what I was facing at that time is pales in the comparison of hardships that I've faced since then. But at the time it was overwhelming. And I just remember clinging to those verses and going, okay, it doesn't matter. Even if this earth has nothing to offer me, which there were plenty of wonderful things in my life at that time. You know, David's writing that probably in a cave, his life is being threatened. Like he thinks he's going to be killed at any moment. Apparently as a college girl, that's how I felt at that time. But knowing I always have the Lord by my side and he's enough and he's there for me and he loves me and he cares about me and that's enough. And I mean, truly, I clung to that verse and, you know, eventually my world turned back upside down and God got me through it. But I would say that's the verse.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, there are a lot of other verses that you share and stories, and you all want to pick up your own copy of the College Girl Survival Guide, 52 Honest, Faith-Filled Answers to Your Biggest Concerns. Well, I know people are going to want to connect with you, Hannah. Where can they go to find you?
Yep. My website is probably the easiest portal to all of it, hannahseymour.com. Hannah doesn't have an H, like both of my names are spelled annoyingly. So Hannah doesn't have an H at the end of it. And Seymour is spelled Seymour. So like the French way, I guess. But hannahseymour.com. And then, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff is there. My book is there. There's some free resources that are there. I blog there. I used to blog every single Tuesday faithfully and, you know, baby, book, all of that. Again, we're survival mode right now. So blogging is one of the things I had to cut out at the moment. But anyway, at some point, I'm sure I'll be blogging again there. But lots of stuff there.
Fabulous. Well, we will have all that information for you all in the show notes. So you'll want to be able to connect with her because Hannah, I got to tell you, girl, you got a lot of it put together. You really do. And for such a young woman, we could chat for like another probably 3 hours easily. We could jump into motherhood. I mean, who knows? We'll just have to have you back.
Please. I would love that. Really, you need to coach me on motherhood. Like how do you have 5 humans that have survived and grown up well? And I've got lots of questions for you.
Well, we'll have to reconnect. But before I let you go, this series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
What has my story gifted me? I think, the journey of learning to trust that God has the bigger story woven out and planned for me. You know, David tells us in the Psalms, every single one of my days is numbered. He knit me together in my mother's womb. Every day is numbered. My story has unfolded radically different than I could have ever. I didn't think, you know, I didn't get married until 30. I didn't have my first baby until 33. I've got a book coming out at the same time. I never would have fathomed if you had told me 18 years old, let me give you a snapshot of what your life would look like at 33. But trusting in God's timing and in his provision, it's so different, but it's so much better than I ever would have written it if I had written it myself. And so I think just trusting in that process. And I know that it's not, you know, I'm 33. Like I've hopefully got another 60 years of life to live and watching how God's design by his providence, how all of that unfolds. and seeing him in all the details. I mean, it's fun. I know you've got to share that of looking back down the timeline of your life and going, wow, he is in so many details that we don't see in the moment. And trusting that now and knowing that we're going to continue to have that revelation until heaven, right? I mean, I think half of heaven is just us all figuring out how all the details, you know, intertwined and like, oh my gosh, that impacted that person. And so anyway, I think that's the gift, has been seeing how God's timing and provision truly is so much better than if I had been in charge myself.
Oh, well, I'm glad you trusted God, and you trusted him at a very young age, at 4 years old, and yeah, you've continued that journey. And I got to tell you, Hannah, the best is yet to come.
Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure and a delight.
Thank you. I've so enjoyed this.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.